leave a little bit early today, and I don't want to switch gears and lose him. So unless there's an objection to that. Okay. Dave, whenever you're ready.
Well, good morning, everybody. The Research Steering Committee report. Research Steering Committee met on May 30th, and just quickly run through the documents you have in your binder, which is behind tab 8. The one we'll be working from principally will be the meeting summary. That's the first document. There's also a copy of our research review policy. There are two final reports. One is the production and testing of an alternative bait selecting for haddock, and the second one is using hook and line to minimize cod bycatch in a directed haddock fishery on Georges Bank and in the Gulf of Maine. Those are both in your binder as well in paper. Fourth is the NCRPP-sponsored peer review of the study fleet project. Also, the Northeast Consortium presentation on its fisheries and ocean data management system. There's a staff memorandum on the Northeast Fisheries Science Center report on the impacts of fishing on groundfish spawning activities. We'll give you our results on that. Committee document containing the mandates in the reauthorized Magnuson-Stevens Fisheries Conservation and Management Act as they potentially apply to research, and a meeting summary of the NCRPP-funded haddock trawl workshop held on April 3rd at the University of New Hampshire. So that's a list of the paper you have, supporting documentation. So I guess we'll get right into it. The first thing we did is do final project reviews. One of our charges, as you know, is to review projects, make sure that the peer reviews are adequate, and to hopefully add value to those peer reviews and pass them on to the council. So the first one we reviewed was this production and testing of an alternative bait selecting for haddock. This was a project development award from the Northeast Consortium. So it was basically a pilot study. And basically what they did is they tested haddock baits developed in Norway and in the Aleutians, as well as squid and herring. And also they tested a novel new bait fabricated by one of the project principal investigators, Dr. Susan Goldhoer. And a small amount of that initial version of bait was manufactured and tested. And the results were that all three fabricated baits fished well and significantly reduced the catch rates of cod relative to that of haddock, below that achieved with herring. The experimental design did not include paired comparisons. This was just a study to see whether or not these baits were viable. Northeast Consortium peer reviewers judged that the results with fabricated baits were encouraging enough to justify further research. So that brought on a much larger project, which is the second one we reviewed. This was the using hook and line to minimize cod bycatch in the directed haddock fishery on Georges and in the Gulf of Maine. And that was funded by the Northeast Cooperative Research Partners Program. This was quite a large study. We also received this report. And the main objective of this project was to confirm the appropriate bait location and seasonality to minimize bycatch of cod while targeting haddock with benthic longline gear. The ultimate goal was to identify potential special access program areas in which fishermen could be granted exemptions from various input controls, i.e. closed areas, hook limits, etc., in exchange for adhering to higher standards of monitoring and performance. The investigators concluded that the catch rate of landed haddock was significantly higher than the catch rate of discarded haddock, as well as landed and discarded cod in the longline fishery using this fabricated norbait. One of the things that they also did was to they had a hard time directly comparing the baits. But they did provide follow-on analysis for comparing the catch rate of cod per haddock between otter trawls and longline gear in the eastern U.S. Canada management area. And the results of that, the investigators found statistically significant differences in the cod bycatch rates of longliners mainly using norbait and otter trawls in the same months in areas in the eastern U.S. Canada area. Reviewers found this ancillary analysis provides support for the hypothesis that bycatch rates of cod and hook gear can be reduced by the use of artificial baits, and although not definitive, that bycatch rates of cod are lower in the hook gear than observed in the trawl gear. So the Research Steering Committee had quite a lengthy discussion on these two reports. There's a lot of information in them. Because they were done in separate ways, the information was, I don't want to say disjointed, but it was a little bit hard to put it all together. The RSC had, we did have some difficulties, as I mentioned. For this reason, and in order to discuss the body of work as a whole, the committee addressed both projects in their comments. Committee members agreed with what they termed the excellent technical comments by both the NAC and NOAA Fisheries, concurring that the preponderance of the evidence, and this was basically the words we coined ourselves, there isn't proof beyond a reasonable doubt here, but the preponderance of the evidence was in keeping with the PI's conclusion. They also noted that the reviewers identified the need for further work, but discussed the possible difficulties in replicating conservation engineering projects that are subject to the natural variability that occurs in all fishing operations. In short, it's very difficult to design a paired bait test for long lines. There are a lot of issues that go into this. The fact that the baits have what they call bait plumes that attract the fish from some distance, and it's not as simple as just laying down two long lines side by side and using different baits and saying, well, this one caught more than that one. It's a very difficult process. Committee also recognized that the work on the fishing grounds was and will be in the future constrained by the very low allocation of cod available under most experimental fishery permits. This was another aspect of this, that they had to fish at times of the year when it was expected to have relatively little interaction with cod. It's hard to tell sometimes if there's not many cod there in the first place what the real results are. That was a further constraint that was on this project. Catch per unit effort was determined to be a reasonable proxy for the lack of side-by-side comparisons with different baits. This was something that the scientific people on the committee debated quite a bit. There was some question as to whether or not that was a reasonable proxy, but it was judged to be so by the scientists at the meeting. Having voiced the above concerns, the RSC panel agreed to forward both project reports on to the Council's Groundfish Committee and its plan development team for their use as appropriate. Members agreed by consensus that the Council and PDT should use caution in making broad assumptions about using these results in space and time outside the areas tested. And again, what we were saying here is that because this may work, as an example, in November in closed Area 1, that doesn't mean it'll work in May in the eastern Gulf of Maine. That you can't necessarily conclude that it's across the board in space and time, that you'd actually have to test it and see different fish eat different things at different times. The RSC encouraged the PIs to put their information into a single document for the plan development team so that a synoptic review with complete information from all sources is available in a reasonably digestible form. So I'll stop here for a minute and see if there's any questions on those two final reports.
Any questions for Dave? Anyone in the audience? Okay, Dave, I had one question. I was wondering if in the final report that was submitted, if at the RSC meeting, any discussion of the performance of this gear and an actual fishery was brought forward or not.
By performance, you mean the catch rates?
Yeah, the catch rates coupled with the observer coverage that occurred, say, in the SAP in Area 1.
Not specific relative to the observer coverage. There was some discussion of the analysis that was provided about the catch rates in the various fisheries and what that meant. And it was actually they looked quite extensively at the discard rates, at the ratio of legal to sublegal fish. I think a lot of people found that very interesting. But as far as specific to the observed trips and stuff, no, there was no discussion.
Okay. Phil?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Dave. That's about what it was. But I found the project very interesting, but I have to draw a little caution to the council when you use it. The comparison to the trawl fishery wasn't, they didn't have a trawl boat there and a hook boat or anything thereabouts. It was a data type search, so it kind of skews it. I wouldn't say it offsets it at any rate, but it's a different picture that you're looking at. I ain't saying it was wrong to do it that way, but you don't want to assume that it was a long line and a trawl boat together type deal.
Anyone else? Okay, Dave.
Okay. Next, we reviewed the Cooperative Research Program sponsored peer review of the Pilot Study Fleet project. This was a peer review of the Study Fleet Electronic Logbook project, which we have reported on a little bit before. I'll just read a quick quote here from the actual report, which is in your binder. The Study Fleet project provides a solid basis for gathering some types of information that might be useful for improving current stock assessment and management processes. These types of information principally include tow-by-tow catch data, area of catch, temperature at depth, and self-reported landings on a near real-time basis. So I won't spend a lot of time running through the actual review. It's in your binder. There's quite a bit of information there on various aspects of it, but the review was very positive. It concluded that this was a valuable and worthwhile project, and most of the time we spent was on discussing where do we go from here. And our advice is that the study fleet would not necessarily be a tool that would enhance the stock assessment process in a classical sense. The committee recommended the report be channeled to the council's plan development teams and or committees, given their experience with the practical information needs associated with specific management programs. For example, in some cases, the operational details of a particular program are necessary for a complete evaluation to occur, especially with the greater emphasis on place-based management. The Research Steering Committee believes that these groups can best respond on how the study fleet concept might be applied to particular fisheries. Committee members pointed to page 4 of the peer review report as information that would be helpful to managers. So as discussed, the PDT should be aware that recommendations for deployment of a study fleet should be forwarded to the Cooperative Research Partners Program staff by this October. So, again, I'll stop and see if anybody has any questions.
Dr. Pierce.
David, in number 4, document number 4, where we have that peer review report of the pilot study fleet, on page 2, last paragraph, I note that it says, comments from the Northeast Fishery Science Center scientists indicated uncertainty about the specific application of the study fleet information. It goes on from there. Could you elaborate a little bit? The reason why I ask is I recall, my goodness, it seems like 5 years ago now, when we first got into the idea of study fleets and industry-based surveys, such as for cod and for yellowtail flounder, the Northeast Fishery Science Center, some of the scientists in particular, that took the lead role in that, in those endeavors, especially for the study fleet, were very high on the study fleet and had described very well what some of the benefits of the study fleet would be for improving assessments, learning more about fisheries specifically. Therefore, it's a bit of a surprise for me to see now the center scientists indicating uncertainty about the use of the study fleet information. I must have misunderstood. I thought that because of their lead role in assembling the concept, putting together the concept of study fleets, that we would have already had a rather well-thought-out blueprint as to how that study fleet information would be used. So could you elaborate as to what exactly was their specific concern?
Yeah, I think, well, there's two issues there. The first is that this was basically a pilot project so that the information gathered had varying, I don't know how to put it best, the reliability was variable because of things like computer failures, software glitches, things like that, which is to be expected in a pilot project as you try to develop this stuff. The second aspect of your question would be, now that those have been worked out, as the data is gathered, what of this data could be used in, for example, a stock assessment? And my recollection of the peer review was, and I think we might even have a reviewer here so they can chime in if they disagree, was that certain elements of this information are useful, such as self-reported discount rates, but are not necessarily 100% accurate because they're estimates. You know, for example, the discards aren't weighed, so it's a captain's hail of the discards. So they can use the information, but it's not exactly of a caliber as, say, observer weighed discards. But what was useful to them, very useful, was this, first of all, the real-time reporting, so that the information is transmitted at the end of the trip as opposed to logbooks that come in 30 days and then need to be processed and whatnot. So they had a very real sense of what was going on the grounds. Second was the accurate toe-by-toe basis information, which showed, for example, different fish appearing at different times of the day or night. The third was the depth information, again, you know, showing that certain fish occurred at certain depths. The temperature information is very useful. You can start to correlate bottom water temperatures with the appearance or disappearance of certain species. And the placed-based aspect of it, the very, because it's the GPS records the position of the vessel continuously and reports it, that they had a very accurate sense of where things were caught and at what depth and at what time. So does that help?
Yeah, that helps. I'll just say that I'm very supportive of the conclusion that was drawn in that paragraph I just referenced. That is, additional thought needs to go into how to apply the study fleet information. Actually, more than additional thought, I think real in-depth major effort needs to be undertaken to figure out how to apply that study fleet information and, frankly, how to use the information that's been obtained from both peer-reviewed and lauded cod and yellowtail flounder industry-based surveys. A wealth of information is there that should be used, especially for the next go-around with the assessments. My understanding is it will be used. So, again, I have strong support for that particular conclusion, which I'm taking as a recommendation.
Phil Rule.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think as Dave pointed out, when you go through the report, and you know, as you know, I pushed for that report for a while to get it, and so it's there and what have you. But basically, at the end of the day, as we stand right now, you got probably a little over $3 million invested in this thing, and not one bit of data has been used. It's, you know, it's out and about, and will be used. You know, as Dave reported, it's got a wealth of information that's in there. But to date, to my knowledge, no information out of that thing's been used.
Paul Howard.
I think that from my recollection, we have the two major programs, the industry-based survey and the study fleet. And I think the industry-based survey is the key tool to input assessments and modeling. That seems to be where we should rely on assessments and inputting the stock assessments. The study fleet, I think there are aspects of the study fleet, like discard rates, that could be put into modeling for different species stock assessments. But there's also some tremendous needs for management as we develop management to look at areas of discard rates for management as well, and gears and you know, nighttime, day, all kinds of things. I think it's geared more towards real-time information for management as well. So I think, I agree with Dr. Pierce that we ought to take a look at study fleets and look at a, maybe it's a dual track. Let's look at the purpose and need to supplement science and the purpose and need, more real-time and management relationships as well. So I think that's something we ought to direct the committee to look at.
Nancy?
Since there have been concerns that have been raised by this and since the center has been invoked as raising some of these concerns, is it worthwhile to have either Jim or Earl Meredith is here as well, perhaps address some of the questions if that would be worthwhile? I'm happy to have either of them address some of these. I know that there has been a lot of money invested in it, and I know that we are really interested in continuing working with the industry as much as we possibly can. There is a huge amount of information, obviously, that's available, and we do depend on the industry to get that information. So, from the center's perspective, obviously, this is very important work. And so I don't know if Phil or David have any specific questions. They're here, and they can certainly address them.
Phil, I saw your hand up. Do you have a specific question?
No, I just, to Paul's point, I absolutely agree. I think this is a real good tool. I asked for a report for quite a while now to get the report so that you really could use the tool. That kind of seems to be the stumbling block from what we set up as a system is you need to, you do something, you need to review it, then you can use the information. But to Paul's concern, one of my major issues as management or what have you is in the study fleet data. And the PTR data used now, if a boat goes out and catches five species, it's assumed he caught five species all trip. The reality is he went here to get that, 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 and the study fleet shows that, and that information is yet to be used.
Chris Kellogg, and then Jim or Earl, if you have anything you want to add.
Well, going back to Dave Pierce's comment, I think we have to be careful in what our expectations of how this additional information that Dave Gaethel described can be used in assessment models. And I think they're a long way from being able to use some of that precise information and integrate it into an assessment modeling. And I think those were some of the concerns that were raised by the center scientists at the peer review.
Jim, I saw your hand up. Is it still up? Okay.
I haven't had any direct involvement in this, and I don't have a lot of details to give you, but I can comment about that comment that Dave Pierce pointed out about that the assessment scientists were uncertain about how to use the data incorporated into their analytical assessments. And this seems to be often a problem that is recognized. It also came up at the latest Mid-Atlantic Council meeting regarding the RSA-funded projects. And they were struggling with looking for ways to more closely tie in the work that's funded with the actual stock assessments that are done. So I think this is a mismatch that does exist. It's good that the problem's been identified, and I'll try to carry the message back to the center. But I don't have I wasn't at the peer review, and I don't have a lot of details to fill in on this. I think Earl Meredith has a few things to say.
Earl, come on down.
Hi, Earl Meredith from the Cooperative Research Partners Program. One of the aspects of the study fleet that we have found, we've done a lot of analysis and comparison with observer data and VTR, and we have found that we have a much greater array of species being reported because it's a toe-by-toe reporting basis rather than a recall issue at the end of a trip. So we have much more higher resolution and species-specific of catch and discard. So we think there's a lot more accuracy there. There are issues in terms of self-reporting data, just as we have in the VTR. But one of the real valuable things is that on a small scale, sort of a statistical application, we will be able to get a lot of information real quickly for data-poor assessments. So things like maybe tilefish in the Mid-Atlantic or hagfish here in New England, it'll be able to provide a lot quicker and a lot more information than what we currently have. And as far as the industry-based surveys, they have been peer-reviewed, and they were, you know, found that there's a lot of valuable information, particularly biological information, some of which has been used in the yellowtail assessment, the last one where they actually improved the age tables, the age at catch table. So there's a tremendous amount of biological information that's being processed, and we're now looking at getting some of the towpath information, getting those data sets and incorporating and then restratifying some of the yellowtail toes into more closely align with the Science Center surveys, and then looking at those toes from a swept area basis. So if we have higher resolution of those towpath data and we can incorporate those swept areas and have, you know, a more accurate look at the catch rates there, I think it will provide some more information for us.
I appreciate the input from Jim and from Earl. It's very encouraging to hear that, you know, study fleet information as well as the IBS information, you know, the usefulness of that information is being appreciated, already being used, and I suspect will be used even more so as we move forward with some of these GARM assessments. So that's all I wanted to hear, that indeed the assessment scientists who have the tough job of doing these specific species stock assessments are aware of the database and it appears are using the database. And that can certainly go a long way towards improving the assessments and giving this council a lot more confidence in the assessment results. Thank you.
Phil, and then April.
Thanks again, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure that it fits right here, so I'm going to go with it anyhow. There's a lot of concern amongst the industry from folks I've talked to up and down. And I do mean up and down the coast. When we've done a lot of cooperative research, I mean, I don't know what the bill is up here. I think it's well over $15 million. I think it's way closer to $20 over the last few years. And the concern I hear from a lot of people, and I find it very distressing, is that you can go do all the cooperative research you want and what have you. You can go do gear work. You can go do this. You can go do that. You can't get into the stock assessment vault. Now, I understand all the complexities, and a lot of the industry doesn't. But when the perception, and I'm not sure I totally disagree with it at this point from what I've seen, is when you try to get into the stock assessment arena of things, something is found wrong with that information. It's going to be interesting going forward to what parts of the industry-based surveys will be in there, what have you. Now, what kind of bugs me about the way this happens is in quite a few of these instances, the regional office and the center sit there in the development of the project, right on through it. They're right there, you know, saying how this thing should go and how it should happen, and then at the end of the day, we got a problem with it. And I understand the complexities, but that's the perception I'm hearing from a lot of people, and I think at some point we need to look at it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sort of a follow-up to Phil. During the peer review, particularly for Yellowtail, the reviewers did acknowledge that there were a number of data elements that should be pursued since the conclusion of the survey.
They did acknowledge that there was a wealth of data there, and we ended abruptly. Recommendations were made, and one of them, as Phil's talking about, there was quite a bit of discussion about calibration and whether, you know, what could or could not be used towards a biomass estimate. And I guess my question to you is, where are we going in the future in terms of utilizing this data in a wider realm, as was originally intended, and as I think a lot of the industry that signed on in the beginning intended this to be used for? So I guess I'd like to hear from you on that.
Certainly the biological data is absolutely important, and it's already proven itself valuable. So we'll continue to look at age and growth and fecundity rates and things like that that you guys collected. In terms of developing the overall survey system along the entire coast, the information could be useful in helping us establish specific species-specific surveys in the future that would address a very clear and precise hypothesis, not necessarily a long-term data series. But in terms of looking at the efficiency of a closed area or expansion or contraction of the stocks or very specific hypotheses, the industry-based surveys are really valuable in doing that. And also providing information in terms of establishing the overall survey system coast-wide, integrating with the Bigelow and existing industry-based surveys like the Maine New Hampshire Intertrawl Survey, and contributing some information to the development of NEOMAP.
Well, one other point, I guess, the first day we were talking about the Bigelow, and we're talking about the problem with the two sweeps and the fact that the winter survey is going to go away. And the reason that both the cod survey and the yellowtail survey were done was because it was data poor in terms of assessment. So I guess what I'm wondering now is, we ended the survey, it's been a couple of years, we ended in 2005. Now things are going to change, and we won't have a winter survey, which is normally when flatfish are caught, when they use the cookie sweep. So I'm wondering if there's been any thought given by the agency to how you're going to address this again in monitoring this stock, on whether a modified IBS survey or how that's going to be done. I mean, we got the snapshot for the 3 years, and yes, we collected an incredible amount of biological data, but it seems like it's just come to an abrupt end. And besides just processing the data, I'm very appreciative that it is going to be used in the GARM, and I know Chris LaGault is looking for a lot of the information you just described, but has there been a thought from your end as to how this should be continued in the future to monitor Southern New England yellowtail?
That's probably a question for the survey committee, the design committee. I don't know specifically if there's going to be focus on, a winter survey for flatfish in southern New England. But I know that there have been some modifications to the design that will include some specific areas and some higher density tow areas in the southern New England area. Maybe Jim knows
Yeah, and again, I'm getting out of my realm. I'd have to actually speak to the people that know these surveys, and I don't want to say what was intended originally or not, because I don't have that information. But it's my understanding that the data that have been collected are being used for biological information, that is, better age and growth information. I don't think that they're being used as a survey index, and so your understanding may have been that that's what they were intended to be, but I don't think they're being used that way by the center. And one thing I should have pointed out originally when I spoke is that the cooperative studies that are done are often fairly specific. And when a stock assessment is done, they're trying to look at the entire stock. So the models that are used are often quite general. And it's difficult for a modeler to incorporate specific information from a study about a particular area. And I think that's one of the things that Earl mentioned a little bit as well. So to really answer your questions, I'd have to go back to the people involved, and perhaps John Hoey would also be better able to answer those questions. So we'll have to do some research to get back to you.
Pat?
I just think the council needs to be aware that when the industry-based surveys were designed, they were designed specifically to answer research questions in a defined area. The idea of that they were going to supplement and have, thankfully, supplemented the stock assessments has probably evolved from the work itself. But what you get out of the survey depends on what you put into it and how you plan it. So bear in mind that the original idea, I was on the implementation team or the design team or whatever it was called, when we spent a lot of time trying to develop what questions the survey would answer. So if there are difficulties now with the output, it was because of the way the survey was designed. The Maine, New Hampshire survey is an exception to that. So when we get to discussing that, that has been a monitoring survey. It's been on year-to-year funding, but that's the kind of survey that can feed into the assessments because it was designed in that fashion. We call it an industry-based survey, but there are two different things going on. So there are research questions that were to be answered by the Yellowtail and the Cod survey, and there are monitoring surveys for long-term assessment work.
Dr. Thompson.
Yeah, getting back to April's question, the short answer is yes. Clearly, the center is taking a look at all of what we have done previously with the Albatross, what we can do with the Bigelow, what we can't do with the Bigelow, and how we're going to do that work that we cannot do with the Bigelow. And the work that we cannot do with the Bigelow is largely related to the fact that it's a deeper vessel. It can't come in closer to shore. For example, we've made investments in NEMAP. We're making additional investments in NEMAP, which is a nearshore-inshore survey, using a charter vessel. We're looking at moving to an NSF, a National Science Foundation boat, which is what the UNOLS boat is. That's what we keep calling a UNOLS boat, to do the scallop work. So yes, we are looking at alternatives, and we are planning, obviously, to make those kinds of substitutions so that we can sustain the integrity of our databases. I think a lot of the discussion obviously relates to in terms of this as cooperative research, and to a certain extent in terms of the value of this information and having it useful in stock assessments implies that as a science center, since we're the ones that take that information through the SAW-SARC process and produce those assessments, it's better for us to be more involved, I think, in these surveys as well. Rather than wait to the end when we have the data and see the data, it's probably better for us to be involved as these surveys are being implemented as well to help with these surveys so that if the intention is to produce information that is useful for stock assessments, for us to be more engaged during the implementation of these surveys as well.
Okay, it's been a healthy discussion. We've got to move on. Dave?
Okay. Thank you. Actually, this provides a good segue into the next discussion, which was data archiving and data access, because as everybody's just pointed out, we have developed a huge information base, and it'll be useful for years to come, and we've got to find a way of preserving it. So we received a PowerPoint presentation from Bob Gorman and Dickie Allenson of the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute on the Northeast Consortium's system, which allows researchers, managers, fishermen, and the public to access data from the Northeast Consortium-funded cooperative research projects. And we had quite a long discussion about that presentation. We came up with some consensus points here, which are listed sort of best practices as opposed to requirements, and an acknowledgement to real-world exceptions and possibly unusual circumstances surrounding data. We did conclude that technical reviews of final reports should not be conducted unless the underlying data is provided and made available to reviewers. We also concluded that a list of standard elements for data recording and posting, particularly for industry-based survey work, as well as a system of quality controls, is considered essential for data that will be used in federal fisheries management decision-making. We also concluded that the ICES FAO Working Group on Fishing Technology and Fish Behavior was identified as an appropriate body to develop protocols for standardizing, documenting, reporting, and analyzing data collected from comparative gear experiments. We are also interested in providing raw data to facilitate cross-checking as soon as possible, particularly in the case of long-term assessment-related projects, and we think that's a particularly important step in providing data access and ensuring proper archiving. And we also suggested that before closing out a contract that we ensure that the transfer of all raw data has occurred. So if anybody has any questions.
Sally?
Yeah, I'll just say that rings true with me just as I'm thinking about the work that the Habitat Committee's done over the last few years and the strong interest that the committee had in and still has in looking at the work that was done by SMAS, the video survey, and the information that they've collected there certainly doesn't just apply to the Scallop resource, but much more broadly, as they're kind of going forward with their work to kind of go back and look at the huge data set that they have from the video survey that they've done, that would be very helpful if it were available for some of the habitat decisions that are even yet to be made.
Paul Howard.
Dave, you know, the CRPI program has its own webpage. Does the committee have any recommendations to improve our webpage, or are we just making recommendations to the council?
Actually, what we were doing is trying to find what's out there, and with the idea of how are we going to do this across the board. This program's already set up and running, and we're not saying this is necessarily exactly how the other groups may want to do it, but it's a good template to look at. So that the data can be provided, whether it's through the NRCP or SMAST or GMRI or whoever currently is holding large chunks of data and trying to get some standardization so that no matter who the researcher is or who the member of the public is, they can come in and access the data and mine it as is necessary for whatever project they're working on in years to come. Okay. All right, next we moved on to the Northeast Fisheries Science Center report on the impacts of fishing on groundfish spawning activities. This was a request from the council because of the EFP guidelines that have been developed when people want to access closed areas to during spawning periods for various research projects. And the Science Center provided us with a summary of new information. Report also generated what is known about how fishing gear may or may not impact spawning behavior, and it raised a lot of concerns and questions both at the council level and at the RSC. So we basically went back and revisited it with the questions that this council had asked at the last meeting and the meeting before, and let me provide you with our conclusions. As I said, we had several discussions. We spent a lot of time on this. We realized that it's a somewhat contentious subject. It's also, unfortunately, a subject that does not have definitive answers. We know a lot more about spawning behavior now than we did 20 years ago, but we still don't know what fishing impacts during spawning are. You know, we have some studies that suggest some things, but there's a lot of maize, a lot of shells, a lot of could-bes, but there isn't there aren't a lot of is's, that this is the case. So following that discussion, the committee agreed to forward the document to the council. The research steering committee recommends the report be used as guidance by NOAA Fisheries and the council as they consider research projects and fisheries actions in the future. Members noted that, at the same time, there is no direct cause and effect presented with respect to fishing mortality and fishing activities during spawning. Members added that whether a precautionary approach is taken or not with respect to spawning activities and fishing, those issues are policy matters. With respect to research activities in particular, the committee recommended that projects be considered on a case-by-case basis and suggested researchers be asked to provide clear justification concerning their need to access closed areas during peak and or the spawning season, and an assessment of the impacts of their work on spawning activities. So basically what we did is say, okay, if you want to get in there, at least provide us with some pretty extensive justification for why it has to be at that time and in that place, given the information that we currently have. So if there's any questions. Great. Next, we moved on to research-related mandates and the reauthorized Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Act. And we identified three areas that will probably require research steering committee action. And I'll just list them off quickly. A need to partner with or develop a relationship with the Science and Statistical Committee concerning the task of establishing research priorities. Potential use for the Fisheries and Conservation and Management Fund, including depositing the proceeds from the sale of research set-aside catches as a possible means of easing the administrative burdens on these programs. And third, revisiting the circumstances in which days at sea are used during research activities. So it's, I think, pretty straightforward. Okay. Lastly, we had a review of the summary report from the April 2007 Haddock Separator Trawl Workshop. It was provided by Mike Pohl from the Mass Division of Marine Fisheries Service. His reviews included the following points from the report. The conveners acknowledged there will not be one gear design that will work in every situation. Different habitat types, such as mud, sand, gravel, rocky, etc., will favor different gear types. So there isn't going to be a one-size-fits-all here for gear requirements. Conveners recommended that a variety of gears be immediately identified for pilot use by the industry and are confident that industry members have the necessary experience to employ the most efficient gears for their harvest area and bottom types. They further recommend that the eliminator separator trawl tested by the University of Rhode Island and the University of New Hampshire rope separator trawl be considered for pilot scale use by the industry in the Eastern U.S. Canada area SAP and or regular B days at sea program. Data collection on landings, discard, and catch rate should be required for participation in these programs to confirm expected gear performance under commercial conditions. Conveners also recommended further consideration of the Division of Marine Fisheries Service 5-point trawl once additional stability tests are completed. And the conveners request that the National Marine Fisheries Service and or the New England Fisheries Management Council develop more specific gear requirements and performance standards necessary to gain authorization for use in a Haddock SAP and or regular B days at sea program. So those are five specific recommendations to the council from this group.
Any questions?
Excuse me? Pat, is that document number 8 or 6? Or what number is the document for that report? We'll get back to you in a second.
Document 8.
Okay.
Behind tab 8.
I have so many binders here that by the time I get done shuffling the paper, we'll be out of time.
Number 8.
Okay.
Good, Dave.
We also received an update on the Cooperative Research Partners Program activities from Dr. Hoey. Basically, program has is probably going to receive reduced funding for this year. Again, I guess budgets still aren't known. So existing initiatives as well as other long-term projects that are channeled through the Science Center will likely continue at some level. That includes the Northeast Consortium and the Mass Marine Fisheries Institute, for example. And since details aren't final, there's not really much we can report to you, but there probably will not be a vigorous cooperative research program in New England this year based on both the amount of money and the fact that the time is expiring and it's still not here. So, you know, we're running out of time. Lastly, I'd just like to say that the committee had some other discussions. I think we'll be able to report back to the committee after this meeting that we did have a thorough discussion of these things. They would like feedback from the council, and we will be providing that to them. We also discussed tracking final cooperative research reports and how they eventually are used in management to make sure that they don't just kind of disappear into a vacuum and sit someplace. We're very interested in seeing that the information that's been collected in these projects is used. And we also discussed the fact that, you know, I think for the last 6 or 7 council meetings, I've been coming here and reporting extensively on peer reviews, and that we haven't done much research steering, and that a lot of committee members would like to get back to doing a little more steering and a little less reading. And that we may spend more time on steering and hold only several meetings a year to review projects in the future so that we can get back to more of our core function. So that concludes my report, if anybody has any questions.
Thanks, Dave. Okay, we're going to move into the open period for public comment. For those of you in the audience that don't know what that is, that's a 10-minute period of time we've set aside in the agenda for you to come forward and bring any business before the council that is not otherwise on the agenda. So here's your opportunity. John Williamson.
Good morning. John Williamson, the Ocean Conservancy. On Tuesday, there was a vote on the HAPC designations. There was some discussion of consideration of the National Marine Sanctuary as an HAPC. This council heard some debate about that and has opted not to go with an HAPC designation for the sanctuary. And that's, you know, that's part of the policymaking of this body. But there was issues raised that I think need to stay in front of this council, and that is that there is a management process that's been unfolding at the Stellaland Bank Sanctuary over a 5-year period, that over 200 participants have participated in that process. A great deal of effort has gone into fact-finding and development of recommendations in a number of areas of the sanctuary's management, consistent with the National Marine Sanctuaries Act. The management plan for the sanctuary will be released now, starting this summer, in phases, and various aspects of the sanctuary's management, and because there's a range of things that are managed within the sanctuary, from shipwrecks to marine mammal interactions to fishery interactions. And so various aspects of the plan will be released in phases. We can anticipate that some of the recommendations for action coming from the sanctuary will be recommendations that have the potential to affect fisheries. And in the participants in this planning process have been very consistent all along during this 5-year period in saying that if there are issues for the sanctuary management that will require regulations that affect fisheries, those regulations should be developed within this process. And so I think there is a anticipating that that we're going to start to learn what some of these recommendations are, having been intimately involved with the entire process as its chair, I think it's fair to anticipate that this summer we're going to start to learn that some of the recommendations, especially on habitat aspects of managing habitat aspects in the sanctuary, EFH, that would potentially coordinate well with the omnibus habitat amendment that's underway here, and then recognizing that the cost of any actions that this council has to take, there's a need to, if there's going to be requests coming out of the sanctuary program, there's a need to coordinate. There's a need for this body to understand what the requests will be coming from the National Sanctuary Program and to anticipate how those requests can best be addressed in the most efficient way by this council. So my suggestion is that the executive committee and Paul probably should be investigating with the sanctuary program what they anticipate will be the requests that may be coming out in the near future with the release of the plan, and how those requests should be delivered to the council, and how the council then might be able to pick them up. So that's just a suggestion. I don't know if it requires a vote. I was unsure whether to bring it up under this forum or under other business later this afternoon, but thought I'd put it up before you now.
John, just so you know, I tend to invite Craig McDonald to the September meeting to give us a briefing on the reports that you've alluded to that are going to start to dribble out this summer.
I think that would be very, very good, because I'm sure the first phase of the report will be out by then. They're anticipating in July.
Vito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Vito J. Calamel. I'm the Executive Director of the Massachusetts Fishery Recovery Commission. And before I start my little spiel, Mr. Chairman, I would like to convey a message that I hear from the public, is that people are very comfortable with you, Mr. Chairman, on coming to this table to speak. So I thank you for making people comfortable. Mr. Chairman, yesterday I heard something that I haven't heard in a long time, that it was very dear to my heart. It's when the people started talking about community fishermen, mainly started from Maine, asking about some kind of work for the scallop vessels that are near destruction, the Downies vessels. I listened to people quiver about 40 pounds, 10 pounds. I listen to people talk about a 35-foot fishing vessel, and I'm just trying to figure where we've reached. It's the New England Fisheries Management Council. It's the Mid-Atlantic Fisheries Management Council. It's the Southern Fisheries Management Council. It's the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. It's the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. They all have committees, Mr. Chairman, that have to do with fish. There is not one committee that has been designated to do with the fishermen. It was the fishermen from the different ports, namely one from Gloucester, that fought tooth and nail for the hag line. It was the fishermen that fought tooth and nail to get rid of the large factory processing ships and trawlers. It was the fishermen who came to the New England Fisheries Management Council, such as myself, for a 6.5-inch mesh, the biggest used, I think, in this country for the size fish that we catch. It was the fishermen who asked for spawning closure areas. And most recently, I led the charge on heron spawning closures. It was the fishermen, mainly from New Bedford, Massachusetts, who led the charge to ask the council to close the yellowtail flounder area when they were devastating small, immature flounders that the processors kept buying and the fishermen kept fishing. My signature is on several of these. Are we now doing, Mr. Chairman, a 360? It seems like we're going back to large factory ships 24/7, something that we fought on, something that the Gloucester Fisheries Commission that I led the charge against. Mr. Chairman, I believe you have one now, and there are two more talking about coming this way. Are we reverting back to somewhere where the fishermen have fought for 20 plus years to get rid of? Mr. Chairman, I ask and request that in the wisdom of this council that you have a fishermen's committee. There are not many real fishermen on this council, but there are some that you should start a committee of fishermen to try to work with fishermen to fish responsible and to save an industry. The Massachusetts Fisheries Recovery Commission. It's to work with recovery stocks at SMAST that I work for, and it's to keep the fishing industry going in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. I have never just said the Commonwealth of Massachusetts when I've spoken at many fisheries organizations and councils. I speak about the fishermen, which encompasses all fishermen. I think yesterday, to me, was another wake-up call, listening from the down east Maine fishermen, struggling like many other ports are. We may, and I say may, be saving fish, but we're not saving the fishermen. We may think that these reductions in harvesting is doing a great job, but is it the fishermen that are causing any problem, or is it pollution up and down the coast, as we've seen in other areas in our own area? We now, Mr. Chairman, have one of the cleanest harbors in Boston, yet there are no more lobsters in Boston Harbor or fish. The Chesapeake Bay has dead zones. Did the fishermen cause that? I think fishermen can work to solve problems, and I beg you, Mr. Chairman, to allow a committee called the Fishermen's Committee to work and have advisors from the fishing communities up and down the coast. As the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission has people from Maine to Florida. I thank you for this time to speak, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Vito. I'll take that under advisement, and I think that's got a lot of merit. Tom.
Thank you. That's Tom Osmers from the Vineyard. I just want to submit, as I had explained to Mr. Popolato, the chairman, two DVD testimonies. One is a documentary of the cod fishery, the hand-operated cod fishery on Martha's Vineyard from 1990, and the other is a tape of testimony of vineyard fishermen that's been collected and is here submitted. I ask that you make copies and provide them to the council members, the Coast Guard, National Marine Fisheries Service, and anyone else that might request one. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Anyone else in the audience that wishes to speak on an issue not on the agenda? Okay. We're going to take a 10-minute break, and when we come back, we're going to start up with groundfish.